Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as...
Like Jack Costello from Netflix's Hollywood. He was like, he felt like this out of place token straight character. And honestly, I don't know, why not make him gay too? He felt like a cis white token that I didn't need in 2020, but go off, Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, I'm wondering like how to the books they are in that series. I haven't seen it, so I'm actually gonna probably give it a shot this week.
Yeah, it's a quick one. It's not bad. It's good.
What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? Woo. Oh, man. Happy quarantine, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. This shit's just getting harder and harder, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's like you're digging a hole, kind of. You know? You just kind of keep going, but it's like, where are you going?
Yeah, we're digging deeper and deeper, and we don't have a ladder to get out of the hole, and that's the problem. But here we are in sunny Texas, where all the people have gone outside and are not being 6 feet apart from each other. And yeah, but I mean, hopefully, I don't know what I hope for. I just hope everyone's still alive and okay. And oh my God, I'm depressed.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. That's good. It's going to be a great idea to take the next few weeks off. But anyways,
how have you been?
So I finally watched Little Fires Everywhere, and I didn't know what to expect. Honestly, I didn't know it would be. It gives me the vibe of Big Little Lies, but it's set in like late '80s.
I think it's like 1993 or 4 or something like that.
Oh, I thought it was late '80s, but yeah, I also didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I liked it a lot more than I thought that I would. It was only until the very end that I was like, what nonsense? Why?
Dude, I just remember when I started watching it, I was so pissed. I was like, I hate everyone for making me side with Reese Witherspoon. This writing is trash. But I mean, honestly, the first few episodes, I really didn't feel like they understood class or race, and I felt like it was coming in from a very strange perspective that didn't understand either of those things, because the whole idea of her being ashamed or mad to be a housekeeper really upset me, you know, because I mean, obviously I'm a daughter of a housekeeper, so it was really upsetting to me why she thought that was demeaning work, whereas I'm not from that. I'm not cut from the same cloth. I don't believe that. I think that's bullshit. I think people work to make a living and period, and it's done. I don't think, you know, she had very strange points of view about being a housekeeper. It pissed me off. So I don't know. How'd you feel about that?
I was a little, I'm glad you're explaining it now, because when I saw a lot of your opinions that you kind of posted here and there online, I had a certain expectation of what I was going to see. And then I saw it, and I was like, oh, this isn't what I thought, she was saying. This is a little different. Mm-hmm. Because this character, the way that I saw it, she wasn't mad at being, like, assumed to... She was mad because Reese Witherspoon's character was, like, assuming that she would do this work for her. And, like, you know what I mean? It was kind of like a thing of, like, you automatically... You know, I guess she saw her through her really quickly, right? She was like, she's trying to be a white savior, like immediately clocked onto that shit or whatever. So yeah, but you're right. The being a housekeeper is not fucking shameful or anything, but it was also like complicated in that Reese Witherspoon was all the way wrong about most things, but Kerry Washington's character was also not perfect. Like, she also had some hypocritical moments and. But she was also kind of fucking badass sometimes. So
sometimes. Yeah. At the end. Towards the end, the writing was nice to her. But in the beginning.
Think all throughout her storyline with the immigrant in the story and all of that. And like the way she was so kind to a fellow artist who was this little girl, you know, that was I don't know. I think there was a lot of points throughout the stories where I was very much like, this is a cool character. Like, she's not perfect. Like, she has some flaws and shit, but like, she's way more interesting than I expected.
No, I mean, their performances alone of Kerry Washington and Reese Witherspoon, wow. And then these kid actors, everyone in the show, their acting has always been spot on. My only thing, again, was just like them not understanding. Whoever wrote this, right, didn't necessarily understand what it meant to like not come from money and to work in someone's home and to like, you know, it just, there's a lot of things that like she said that we already knew that you don't have to say. It's like a big duh to me. And it just felt like someone who's never worked in someone else's house, because it's like, dude. And then like how she would go through Elena's stuff, I thought that was also disrespectful. You know, I was like, you just don't do that. Like, if you work in someone's home, like, it's just the way they portrayed housekeepers and the way she specifically portrayed a housekeeper that felt wrong, and it didn't
Because
feel
it's
like
not
it
who
had any
she was.
dignity.
Like, she was doing that to like get into his house to spy on her kid, basically, and the people that are around her kid. I think I kind of separated her from like being a housekeeper. To me, I just saw her as like this person who was trying to like spy on them. Like, she was no longer a housekeeper.
Which,
To
that
me,
was
she was a
weird. That
spy.
was
Like,
wrong.
and it was wrong, yeah, and in a lot of different ways. But I just don't. She's not representing a housekeeper to me. I don't think she is that. Like, I see her as an artist who has really strange ideas of what being a mother is. Not that they're wrong, but
Yeah, they're just different from the norm,
yeah.
right?
So I guess that's why I'm like not. I just don't think of her as a housekeeper. You know,
Yeah, that was my
she's
whole
not a
thing. I was
person that
just like,
needs to do that to
yo.
survive. That's not her only option in life. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a completely different story from most realities.
Yeah. And that got explained later, and that's when I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't hate the hater anymore. Like, I get it. There's like layers to this mystery woman, and I never really liked Reese Witherspoon's character. I just like, she is like Karen, the Karen, like head Karen in charge. So
She's more
I
like
was
a special edition undercover Karen, because she has this legacy of, in her family, white people trying to be progressive, white people trying, like, they're hiding
Oof.
under this guise of progressiveness, but underneath it's fucking dirty as fuck. That whole town is dirty as fuck. And I like how they exposed her and the town at the same time.
Oh, that was just chef's kiss. Like, the writing towards that very end became surprisingly queer. And, well, I mean, in one way, it was surprisingly queer. The other way,
The other
not so
one's pretty
much.
obvious, yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It was m way more
Yeah,
clear than I
like,
thought. Like, way more.
dude, when those flashback scenes, I was just like blown away by like how interested I was in that story more than I was in present day like Elena and Kerry Washington. Like, I just, their characters after that episode is when everything good and all the writing came together, everything made sense. And my little, I mean, I call it a little derogatory name, I call it Little Whites Everywhere, and I don't think I'm
Derogatory.
wrong. Yeah, I don't think it's wrong though. I think Little Whites Everywhere is correct, right? In this show based out of Ohio. So, you know, all the accolades for Miss Reese and Miss Carrie. I hope they win everything. They should. They deserve it.
And yeah, absolutely. They're great. It was a solid like binge, you know. I would recommend it. Everybody needs to go in and form their own opinions on that, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if you want to talk about it, but Ryan Murphy's Hollywood that I briefly mentioned earlier, it's like a revisionist take of like 1950s Hollywood with a character who's Rock Hudson. There's a lot of made up new characters that didn't exist in real life, but they're based off like Dorothy Dandridge and like real actors that were making movies and being progressive. But I mean, of course, it didn't. Nothing happened, and queer characters were still in the closet. And I don't know, I think it's interesting, like, you know how I always talk about like queer joy and how, who are you writing this for, is this, what gaze is this for, like, who are you speaking to, what's your audience? Like, he really took this story and rewrote what Hollywood was, and I like that. It's very wish fulfillment without it being like about some nerdy some nerdy dude who gets this beautiful girl, right? It wasn't about that. It was just rewriting Hollywood and making it diverse, making it forward thinking and imagining what that would be like. And so that was really, really interesting. And I mean, of course, it's still a lot of white dudes, but that's actually the point. So it was pretty well done. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Is it kind of like in the regular Ryan Murphy style of there being 10 gay white guys that look very similar, or are there non-men
actually
queer people?
There's like a lead who's like a black man, and he is he's a screenwriter. He wrote a screenplay, got it sold. It's amazing. He's the lead, other than the white guy I was talking about that shouldn't be straight. And a lot of it's based around kind of real things, and there's the very first episode, I think they straight up talk about like Asian representation in Hollywood, which I think is wow, non-existent. Darren Criss actually acknowledges his half Filipino-ness again in like a real way, where he talks about, you know, Asian representation, and he's supposed to be a director. I keep thinking Lori Harvey, which is a complete different person. Sorry, thoughts. And she plays a black leading female actress, and it's really cool because you get to see this idea of what if she was the lead of a movie, and what if a black gay man wrote the screenplay, and what if an Asian man was the director. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to me.
All right, I guess I'll check it out. You know me, I just don't like
to. There's a lot of.
I just don't like to watch a lot of scenes. You know,
mm-hmm.
Men.
Ryan Murphy. Yeah, I mean, I skipped over, like, there's a lot where I just had to zoom by because I was like, oh, that's a lot of male nudity I don't need in my life. I'm good. So you're going to do that, but it's worth watching.
For sure. All right, well, let's get into our topic of the day. And maybe before we get into it, it'd be kind of cool to recap a little bit on Alice Wu and, like, saving face a little bit. Because I rewatched it last night. And it wasn't just because we were doing this today. It was because, like, I needed to watch that movie, you know? Like, sometimes you need to watch that kind of... you just need to, like...
Cleanse the soul.
Feel good and seen and... You know what I mean? Like, you just need happy. That shit sometimes.
You just need to be happy sometimes.
So, for those of you that don't know, the creator of this new film that we're talking about today, the half of it, is Alice Wu. And the last movie that she made before this was in 2005. And that's fucking 15 years between productions. And just kind of looking back at this film, you know, obviously you're going to notice some connections between this one and the one that she just released. She's pretty good at telling a story that's not easy on your heart, but still making it good for your heart. Like I was just kind of talking about, like, it also has that same dynamic as the half of it, where there's the main character and then there's a person that she mm-hmm. feels responsibility towards, and then the other person mm-hmm. who she feels a connection to, which those things are not, they don't overlap often. And
they do, and she's realistic about
right like her main characters are flawed. They do really misguided things that aren't easy to explain away. Like you need a whole film in order to realize like this person's doing something that they shouldn't be doing, you know. So that's a couple of things that I saw that they had in common with the half of it. But like the thing that I guess impresses me over and over about Saving Face is that she kind of wanted to show these two parts of her identity that are both ultimately like really human and really the same to her, right? Like mm-hmm. the mother and daughter are both going through a tough time because they fell in love with quote-unquote the wrong person or the unacceptable person. Mm-hmm. They're going through the same thing and they're still at odds with each other a lot of the time. And the very last scene, not to go super spoilery on a 15-year-old movie, but the very last scene kind of sums it up perfectly because it's not all sunshine and roses. These people are mad at their newfound happiness. These people are hating. They're leaving. But at the center of it, on the center of literally the screen and the story, it's what really matters, which is the person that you love and who loves you. And I thought it was a really great message for both of the communities that she feels loyalty to, which is the Chinese community and the queer community.
Bravo. That's, like, the perfect, like, summary of, like, how both of these align. Like, to be able to mix those two things, right? Like, to mix the idea of family, which is very important to, like, immigrant communities, to, like, people of color. Like, our families are, like, a foundational thing to us, so we hold on to it. And she always includes that into her stories, which now she has two, right? She has two movies.
She needs to have had 10. I'm gonna go on a rant later, just giving you guys a fucking heads up about that, but go keep going.
I can't wait to hear your rant. I 1000% agree with it, and I haven't heard it yet. That's how much I agree, dude. Like, I know. So, I mean, Saving Face is a perfect movie, perfect rom-com. We talked about it. It's, I think, episode 67. You can find it on Spotify, iTunes, anywhere. We talked about Killing Eve and Saving Face in the same episode, so you can get your kick there. Like, Alice Wu's perfect fucking, like, she just gets that you don't have to have these tropes in movies, and I'll talk about that later, but that's such an important thing to tell teenagers, such an important thing to tell in, like, a lesbian rom-com from 2005, right? Like, these ideas that you don't have to fall into, and how to, like, show and represent our cultures and our identity and mix that. So, I don't know. I'm obsessed. I love Alice Wu.
Same here. So I guess let's get into the half of it, which is on Netflix. It's a Netflix original by Alice Wu. Yes. A couple of years ago, Alice Wu, I guess, entered the blacklist. The blacklist is like an annual survey of the most liked and unproduced scripts. And it made the 2018 blacklist, which is a pretty solid deal, right? Like, that doesn't mean automatic fame and automatic success, or that your thing's going to get produced. But hers did. And that's fucking amazing. Yeah. And I also really like, what I like about blacklist is that it's about being the most liked unproduced script, not about being the best or the fucking, you know, Forrest Gump of stories. It's like about being the most liked one.
Forrest Gump of stories.
Like, it's good. It's something that people want to see, and that's why it made it on there. So when you watch this movie, don't expect like fucking Citizen Kane. Like, it's
no,
it's the half of it. It's a rom-com. It's a friendship story. It's lovely.
It is lovely. And for some background on the movie, it's based on this super old fucking, I think it was a play, Cyrano de Bergerac. Oh god, I don't speak French. De Bergerac? I said that wrong. But it's about, you know, writing, this dude starts writing love letters for his other dude and falls in love with the chick he's writing letters to. And you know how I know that is that I watched a Wishbone episode on this, and I remember
fucking Wishbone educating all Latinos across the country in 2005.
Let me tell you. Like, dude, I know this story just because Wishbone was writing letters to this chick while, like, they were at war, and I thought, wow, this chick's in love with Wishbone the dog. Like, it's lit out here for this dog. Like, this dog is a
Some
player.
Some white people would relate. Go on.
Damn. But yeah, that's true. So some background on that, we have our lead character, Miss Ellie Wu, who is this nerdy, like, kind of dorky. She's not dorky. I mean, she's dorky. And, you know, she's making extra money on the side by writing extra papers for people, and that's how she's known in her school. She writes all of the papers to get you an A. The staff is well aware, but they prefer to read her stories versus the stories these 16, 17 year old teenagers would be writing, so of course she's gonna write these essays. And of course she meets another dude, a himbo. A male bimbo. I love him, by the way. I love Paul. You meet Paul Munsky, who is a football player, kind of dopey in the head, but a sweetheart, and probably a Taurus because he's obsessed with food. So I just really related to him in a level that I didn't think I would. So shout out to Paul Munsky, who I actually really adored throughout this movie. And of course there's a beautiful, beautiful Esther Flores, who barely talks in the movie. You don't really get to see her point of view, and for that reason I'm glad it didn't stick to any tropes, and like, she's barely in this movie. Like, I kind of like that though. She's her, the idea of Esther Flores is everywhere, right? But the real version of her comes out maybe three times in this movie, and that was lovely though.
Yeah, honestly, so much love to Leia Lewis, who I've seen her in other things. I've seen her in the Katie Keene? No, it's the fucking, what do you call it? Fucking, oh, the CW show.
Harriet the Spy. No. Nancy Drew.
She's in the CW Nancy Drew, where she's more of like a badass. And so seeing the contrast and seeing her go from like badass with tattoos who will like literally murder you to like the dorkiest kid in the world was amazing. Leah Lewis can fucking act, dude. Like, god damn.
Dude, they just threw layers of clothes on her and like hit her muscles. And I was like, how?
I'm a Russian doll of clothing. I see her neck.
She looks buff.
Yeah, she's very fit. She's very in shape. But yeah, as an actress, I was incredibly impressed. The script, which I'm just gonna admit, we read the script a little while before the movie came out. Shout out to The Blacklist. And they kept to it almost to the T, but as you were saying about Aster, they cut a little bit from her from there. And at first I was kind of mad because I was like, this helps you see blah, 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 blah. But then I was like, you know what? It's fine without it.
It is.
Yeah. There's just one where she's like, you know, talking about God and her feelings and stuff like that. But I think it's, which I do think that was a lot clearer in the film, but I'm like, how much would that have added to the story? I don't know. That's debatable, I guess. They also cut out a scene where Ellie locks these girls in the restroom who are talking shit, which I was kind of upset about, but I guess I get why she wouldn't do it. She's too much of a goody two-shoes. I don't know. But yeah, Aster, you know what? Can we just get into that character since, like you said, she's not really into it? I love that she's Aster Flores, a Latina, right? But they didn't try to have her, like, driving a lowrider and eating hot Cheetos. She was just, like, American as fuck. And she lives in Canada in this movie, so, like, that's, I feel like that's okay. And, like, she fucking, I don't know, I think she was really, really fucking cool in that way. Because sometimes you just kind of soak in the culture that surrounds you, right? Like, to survive and shit. A little bit easier when you're white passing.
I mean, yeah, and her whole family. Dude, that scene where she's like at home and they're casually speaking Spanish with like correct, like
right.
Like you can tell they speak Spanish. They're fluent. Like yeah. You're like, I was shook.
I heard the seasoning in that, yeah. Yeah, that was great. I don't think this is spoilery, I'm just gonna say it. Fuck it. Like the moment with her specifically when she's writing back, because a lot of this film is writing back and forth. She calls out Paul and indirectly Ellie for liking her only for her looks, right? Because she knows, she's like, you guys don't know anything about me, I don't even speak. And like, I know, like, and it's complicated, right? I spent way too much time thinking about how society perceives you based on how you look, especially because of the research that I do on like fat representation and shit like that. So when she says this, it's so easy to like hate her for it, but she does it in a way, or she was written in a way that I'm like, she kind of gets self-aware. It though. She kind of gets self-aware. That like, you know, people treat her differently and shit, and I don't know that she recognizes her privilege like to the fullest or anything, but I think she realizes that it doesn't make you completely happy. And that's interesting. So I don't know. I think I like that they got called out, basically, because they were being shallow in that way at first. Ellie maybe not so much later on, but Paul was, right? Until he grew up a little bit.
Yeah, like they just liked the idea of Aster at first, right? Like he was just like, well, she's pretty, you know? And that was like literally what he would say every single time was that
she's
pretty.
Smart and she's not mean.
She's not mean. Like the standards for pretty people are that low, right? Like just don't be mean. And that's kind of it, you know, that's fucked. But I think she called them out because I think in that Wim Wenders quote, that whole movie is about, or there's like a movie in there that's about like you not being seen.
You mean the book?
The book, yeah, I guess in the book. I thought The Remains of the Day was about, like, gay longing and repression.
Oh, I don't know. It was queer. I just got it from the library.
No. Like, it's repression. Like, the guy is describing his old boss in a very loving way. Kind of
hold
like,
on, no
you know.
Spoilers. I haven't read it yet.
Okay, yeah, my bad. And then it's kind of, it reminds me of what's that Fitzgerald book where he's obsessed with his boss and he's writing about him very lovingly as well. Everyone's, the one Leonardo DiCaprio's in, I can't remember it for the save my life. Anyways, Repression. But no, there was another thing in there. It was some movie where it was, the whole point of the movie was like you didn't really understand her. You were just in love with the idea of her. And I think she called them out in one of the letters or one of the movies that they were referencing. Like that's what it was about. And she was like, no, like this is the reason why I like this movie. And that was part of their conversation, but it was only like a sentence and then it cut.
That's interesting.
But anyways, yeah, that's something to like. I was like, wow, okay, so how self-aware is Astor Flores that she is an object versus like a full person? And you get the idea that she understands that too. And towards the end, she's like, that's why she's upset, right? Like, I am a full person. I want to be seen and understood as a full being versus just this idea that both of y'all had of me. So I don't know. I mean, it ending the way it did felt right to me just because it wouldn't have felt right had. What that trope ending, I would have felt kind of icky about it because the whole situation was fucked, right? It wasn't correct. That's not how. I mean, it's not like Ellie didn't have a chance. Like
Yeah.
Ellie did definitely.
So
She had like
we should probably
opportunities.
back it up and like explain the plot a little bit. Hopefully
Yeah.
without spoiling. So basically, Ellie Chu is a main character who like starts writing. Did you already say that? I don't think you said this, right? That she starts writing notes for Paul. Because Paul, he doesn't feel like he's good with words. He's good with sausage. He's good at making
Cookie.
food and stuff, and he's okay at sports, and Ellie's really good at writing. So she gets hired by Paul to write like love letters, and that's where the conversation kind of begins about what love is. Well, actually, it starts at the beginning, but you know, in the dialogue, I guess is when it really starts. Because Paul has an idea of love, and then Ellie doesn't have any idea of love because she doesn't think she knows what it is. I really enjoy what that conversation is because Ellie starts to see Paul's side of it. Paul, like, the whole time is kind of wishing that he could love the way that Ellie does with her words, you know? And what I like about Aster is that she kind of does both. Because the whole time, right, she kind of is falling in love with these words and she feels super connected to Ellie's words. But she, there's a scene where Astor goes to hang out at the train station and she chases after the train. And I'm like, that's a Paul thing to do, you know? So it's like she gets both of the sides of it. She get, you know, and that's, I really love that about that trio, is that they all love differently. And but it like none of it is invalid.
No. Like, their understanding of love is kind of beautiful and connected, the three of them, right? Like, it's like she said, like, Alice Wu said, there's so many triangles in here. This is like a love triangle, there's a friendship triangle, there's just triangles. Like, the guy's name is Trig. Like, what's his Astor Flores' boyfriend is named Trig, and like, she wanted there to be more than one, like, triangle. So I love that, and I love that they're connecting in this way that I don't know, like, to me it felt like whenever Astor was with Paul, she was like, nah, there's something missing, you're not that person,
When they were
you know, like,
in real life in front of each other, yeah, that was really cool the way that they portrayed it now. Like they were like, she's not gonna feel it when he's there because he's not the right one.
nope.
And yeah, so I thought that was really cool too.
Can we talk about all the opportunities that actually Ellie Chu's character had to like holler and she didn't any of those times? I was like, wow, this is too realistic because lesbians also don't know
When the
what's
fuck to make
happening.
the move.
They don't know. They don't even know that like they're like flirting, getting flirted with. They're like, wait a minute. What, did you smile at me? Is this, no, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And she just panicked and freaked out. And I was like, mood, same.
There's a scene where like, and there's nothing that pleases me as a writer more than when like the VOs are used in a good way, which in this film it was, where I think Ellie is saying out loud like, we're never looking at the right person at the right time. I don't remember what the exact line is. Don't quote me on that.
Oh, like the unseen, unknown line. Yeah. That was really, really good.
But she says that line, and in that moment, Ellie Chu's walking down the hallway, and Astro Flores looks at her, and then, like, the camera stays, and then Paul's looking at Aster. I'm like, yo. Yeah, but you're right, because it's like... And then, like, the very first time that you kind of see Aster and Ellie talk, Aster is immediately, like, being super kind, and they read, like, the same book. You know, I don't know, there's just... You're right. If Ellie had put in effort herself, then who knows?
I don't know if effort. I think if she just had, like, the confidence, if she felt confident in herself, she would have seen that first opportunity as, like, a, oh, you read books? Here we go, right? Like, and then, like, that's not even the first time. The first time, like, she drops her books and Aster's like, yeah, I know who you are. Duh. And I was like, that would have been your opportunity right there. Opportunity number one, lost. Opportunity number two, in the bathroom. She's clearly making eye contact and smiling at you. Say something. And if anything, just to insult the other girls. Go. Third time. Like, there's so many scenes where I'm just like, dude, she's clearly into you.
Dude, the whole fucking, okay. The whole fucking hour and 3 minutes to hour and a, and 15 minutes, I think. With like 12 mm-hmm. minutes that they spend together. How does Aster not know that Ellie is the one that's writing her, like, for
the way they're talking?
And when she, like, hands her the painting, dude, how do you? And also, like, you could have just, like, gone and, like, snuck, like, when they were doing that spray painting thing, they could have literally just, like, spied on each other, and then she would have figured it out, bam, boom, done.
Look, that's all I'm saying. Like, that whole scene with the wall, I was like, they're in love. Like, it's clear, it's obvious, but it's not right, right? Like, because Aster is getting tricked, right? It's not okay. Like, I wanted to root for them, but then I was always drawn back to, like, no, this is, like, not okay, because she does not know who this is. This is, like, catfishing. This is, like, consent. Like, there's no consent here, right? Like, if she had agreed to it, which I'm 1,000% sure she would have agreed to it, because she knew who you were, Ellie Chu, and she smiled at you a lot, and she seemed to see you all the time. That's all, like, girl.
Yeah.
There was so many last chances. And then, the hot spring scene, I was like, girl, like, you spend the whole day with someone and didn't even realize the time went by. Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you're in denial, or I don't know how strong your, like, heteronormative, like, bullshit. How many layers of it do you have on? Is it layered like Ellie Chu's fucking layers? Like, I don't understand. Take that shit off and just be honest with yourself. Because, like, what the fuck? The entire day, it was dark when Ellie Chu went home.
I never felt so, like, seen until that fucking hot spring scene. Because I've definitely spent a lot of time with girls where, like, shit, like, happened.
They'll,
like,
say that
similar to that scene, right? You're connecting. She fucking tries to take off your underwear, like, all kinds of, like, non-straight girl shit, you know what I mean? Like, Astro Flores was being, like, way friendly. Whoa. Like,
whoa.
And it was
flagrantly,
like, yeah. And like, still you're, like, not getting, you know what I mean? It's just, so I felt really seen, because I would also leave those days, like, wondering, like,
Does she like me?
If only she were, you know, interested. And, like, wow. Wow.
Like, what the fuck? Like, it was so extra of her to, like, take that much off, like, to get into the pool. I was like, that's not necessary. And then I realized I was also Ellie Chu, because I would have immediately turned around and commented about the deciduous trees.
The entire thing was so accurate to how real life would be that I was like, this is perfect. And I'm glad that this movie was, like you said, like, those parts of it were very problematic. Ellie Chu was not a perfect character. Like, she had a lot of flaws, because she's freaking 17. If she was doing things right, that wouldn't be realistic to me. And and we fuck up and we learn. And at the end of this film, it's very clear that they fucked up. So I there was a lot of things that I appreciated about this movie on the second go around of watching it and not reading it.
Oh, no, yeah, for sure. And then, like, another thing that I noticed was that, oh, God, what did I notice? I think I lost it.
Oh, God. In the swimming scene? Or like,
oh, okay. In the swimming scene, what I did notice is that, I don't know, like you said, the whole conversation they had together, how did she not know it was her? Like, everything they're talking about is just, like, deep. It's intimate. It's on another level. And she even was like, well, I don't talk to other girls like this. We just talk about their boyfriends. And I was like, I compare that scene to the scene in Saving Face where homegirl is in the stairway and she meets her, like, future girlfriend, and she gets completely awkward. Every time she's around her, she, like, falls on the floor. She just becomes, like, an awkward jelly bean. She just, like, I don't know if I have arms or legs. I am Squiggle, right? Like, yeah. And that was Ellie Chu's entire character, and I thought that was adorable to see that. Like, we got to get, like, dorky lesbian representation, and it wasn't a white girl, and it wasn't, like, some skinny, like, cis boring white girl. It was like, cool, dorks get representation too. Like, she's just a squiggle, she doesn't know what's going on, she could barely talk to Aster, and I was just like, oh, seen, represented, right. You know, like, I feel this, thank you so much for being an honest portrayal. And that's why, like, who's directing matters. That's why fucking the writing matters. Like, all of these things matter. Identity matters so much, because had this been done by a white guy, like, I would have been embarrassed. They wouldn't have done it right. It would have been problematic in so many different ways. But I mean, being Alice Wu, like,
it was amazing. God, that it was genius. Alice Wu. I will say, like, you know, a white dude did make one of my favorite lesbian films, but it puts so much stock in like, men. Like, yeah, in cheating and all this other stuff. And they didn't put that much stock in that situation in this film, because it's about context, right? Like, the whole context was that in one of my favorite films, Imagine Me and You. So that's where I'm like, yeah, like, they could make a great ass fucking movie, but it's probably gonna have, like, a perspective that isn't as real, and what the half of it has is a real perspective.
Can we talk about their friendship now?
Yeah, that's gonna be all you, bro, go ahead.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, obviously, right, my perspective on that is personal. I thought it was really endearing and really new age to have a teen rom-com, right? Not even really a be about, like, the main love interest. Of course they're obsessed with her, but at the same time, what you see is, like, this friendship grow between Paul and Ellie, and it's a very real friendship, and it doesn't seem as though Ellie has ever been able to open up. She's dealing with the passing of a family member. I guess, is that a spoiler? I don't know. We've kind of spoiled.
No, that's, I mean, you can, that's not a spoiler. But yeah, we are kind of beyond spoilers now, so.
Yeah, we're beyond that.
Pretty much. Sorry, guys.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. So the friendship between Paul and Ellie is really adorable, in that she's not had any friends, it looks like. She's not been able to open up to anyone. And Paul, just being Paul, which he's a sweet guy. He makes people feel safe. He's not this perfect character. No one is in this movie. Everyone's flawed. And Paul has, of course, the flaw of the propaganda of religion, which religion plays a big part in this movie, because it played a big part in these characters' lives, their idea of love, what religion has done to them, if they believe in God. All those things are, like, important and interesting about these characters, because all of them meet and go to church every Sunday. Not meet, but they go to church every Sunday. And that's central to the theme, because Paul eventually rejects Ellie based off of his, you know, propaganda. You know, the propaganda he's been told his whole life. And he goes, this person that he thinks he's supposed to like and have feelings for, which I'm not sure if he does, because I don't know if he ever truly likes someone, you know, like, maybe he likes Ellie. I think he really knows Ellie. I think he spent enough time with her and her father and their adorable meals. And their friendship was really sweet to me, just because I also had a male best friend in high school. And it just felt really relatable. And it felt like representation for me, you know, for a lesbian and her best, like, male friend, right? Like, and they go on adventures. Like, I would love that story. That's perfect to me. I mean, this is a little bit different. It's a little more complicated, as is life, right? But I thought their friendship at the end was so romantic and so platonic, and I loved it. I loved it. You don't really get to see different iterations of love in, like, rom-coms, because there's all types of love. It's not just romantic love. There's platonic romantic love. You know, you can have that with someone and totally not want to bang them, right? Like, you would want someone to chase this train for you, but you don't want to, like, sleep with them. That's not, like, what that friendship is for. And I'm really glad that they showed all different types. Like, the relationship between Ellie and her father, also very complicated, but also she very, very much loves her father. And just like Saving Face, there's this, you know, strong commitment to your family, to take care of them, to... It's unspoken. It's this unspoken, like, agreement that we all have, is like, we have to take care of our family, period. There's no question about it. And all of these characters are all tied into that. Paul's taking care of his family, trying to follow in the tradition of sausage. I mean, that's funny, that, but it's reality.
It's like, she's doing the thing that she did in Saving Face. She's saying, like, we have the same struggle. Just open your eyes and see that, like, you know, we're all just kind of holding each other down, and, like, that's just, you're just hurting each other for no fucking reason. And Paul realizes this. There's a lot about Paul that I was just kind of, like, bored by, don't get me, like, throughout the entire thing.
Oh, no,
nothing,
me too.
Nothing, like, it's totally personal, right? But when he got to the point where he realizes, like, you know, I don't know, there's also the dad speech. I like Paul and Ellie's dad's relationship, because they don't necessarily, like, neither of them are very good with words. They're very similar, and I think, like, to me, Paul represents the mom character in Saving Face, right? Because she's, like, going through it and, like, kind of all about herself, and then she realizes, like, who her daughter is, or Paul realizes who Ellie is, and they reject it and stuff, and they hurt them and say really hurtful things. That's when I say, like, they say hurtful things.
They're fucked up, still, you know, a little.
It's still feel good film. Like, how do you do that, Alice? No, but there's a scene specifically where, you know, when Aster and Ellie are together, all they do is talk deep, like, poetic, like, super whatever. Talk.
Lesbian fantasy.
And then
yes.
It, like, parallels with, like, Paul and Ellie's dad, like, pounding meat. Like, just slapping the shit out of this fucking sausage that they're making. And I was like, fuck, that's hilarious. And then later on, there's, you know, there's Ellie's dad giving him a speech about, and a lot of it is in Mandarin, so he doesn't understand, but he's listening and he's feeling it, which is, I thought was so interesting. And then the dad just ends off his speech in English with the most beautiful words in the entire world, which is like, don't you ever love somebody so much that you don't ever want them to change?
Tears.
Like, that was amazing. Call Me By Your Name, Eat Your Heart Out, like,
right.
I like that, because that's yet another perspective on what love is, right, from a man who's a widow. And
yeah,
so it's so interesting. I do like that Paul realizes by the end of it that pretending to be somebody that you're not is difficult in the short term, so in the long term, like, you couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, and their relationship is still strong, and he still loves her. And again, like, everyone loves each other in this movie. Well, I don't know about Aster and Ellie. They're maybe not. I don't know what they're doing. But
I love them. Maybe I can't wait for 2 years from now. I can't wait for that sequel.
Ooh, them years from now. See you in a couple years. I was like, write this shit.
Yes,
we all need
you have 2 years to make this. You gave yourself a deadline. Let's go.
I mean, I can't wait till the whole of it comes out. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah,
that's. I don't know if she wants to call it the whole of it. That's fucked. But yeah, I mean, that would be great. But Paul, the father, and Ellie. There's a lot of love between the three. They've broken bread together. They've spent so much time together, and all the sweet things Ellie has done for him as well. not just writing these letters, but she's writing letters to help get, you know, the sausage business off the ground, which is such a kind friend. Like, the friendship between them is solid, you know, and he caught some feelings, you know, because she is amazing, you know, Ellie's awesome. And their relationship to each other is even funny because of the way that they talk to each other. It's just realistic as, like, bros talking to each other. And, like, she was just like, get in there, man. Don't fuck it up. And I was like, wow, friends. Like, this is, how did you think this was
different? I think he just thought that he liked her because he actually felt a real connection, which he did not feel with Aster, I think, overall. I think that was maybe the confusion. Because he literally at one point tells her, like, why are you trying to dress girly? It's not you. I was like, that's a real homie right there. That was nice.
Like, he understood her, and he's like, I got you. I'm going to go take care of this for you. And it just, I don't know, like, everyone deserves a friend that's going to run on that train, like, beside them, saying bye to them like an idiot. Like, everyone deserves that. Doesn't matter if it's a dude or a chick, doesn't matter if it's platonic or it's not platonic, like, everyone deserves that person that's going to do that for you. And this movie is showing that kids and anyone that watches it, that you don't need that person to be, like, in a romantic relation with you that's also sexual. You know, you can have this platonic love, and it can be just as meaningful and just as great as anything else. You know, you got to find and accept the love that comes to you. And sometimes it's not, like, sexual. Sometimes it's just romantic and platonic, and we all deserve that. And sometimes it's a familial bond, you know? Like, her father barely speaks to her, but at the end, he's made, like, huge strides, and he's changed in a way that men change, right? Like, he's still not talking a lot, but he talks more, and he cooked, and he made dinner for her, and that within itself, like, I think Alice Wu said, like, oh, you know, like, and she's like, Chinese people don't, like, apologize, they just, like, sacrifice or do something for you that you know that you like. And I was like, ooh, same. Like, when does a Mexican mom ever apologize?
She just brings you a plate of cut up fruit. Yeah.
Or makes your favorite deep meal and says, come eat it. And that's it. That's the fruit. You were apologizing.
Yeah.
And that's fucked. Because, I mean, in real life, you need therapy and you need to apologize. You need words when you get older, and when you go to therapy, and or if you just, you know, please apologize to people. Please don't just cook a meal. It doesn't work, y'all.
Who says that? Oh my god, there's somebody that says that in something that. Oh, mm-hmm. In One Day at a Time, of course. In One Day at a Time, Penelope says that to Abuelita. She's like, you have to say it, you know. And then she goes and she says it to Elena, and that was my therapy. But yeah,
yeah. Look, y'all gotta apologize. And if you don't get in your life, look, be that person, break the generational cycles of trauma, and start apologizing to people because they deserve it. And also, you know, being gaslit your whole life is not fun. So, I mean, yeah, it's not fun. So you guys just apologize out here. Own up to your shit. That's not, let's not continue that. But anyways, like, that felt real, you know, whether or not it was, like, a healthy way to deal with pain. It's not, but it's a realistic thing, part of, like, immigrant communities or just, like, people of color. Like, that's what we're used to, right? No apologies, barely any words, grumble, grumble, grumble. But I thought that was honest and true. And the fact that they're actually speaking, like, Mandarin and, like, moments into the film, like, I love Alice Wu for doing that, because it's such a fuck you to people who don't like subtitles, and it's such a fuck you to people that, like, get turned off if something isn't in a language they understand, you know? And I'm just like, yes, bitch, do not code switch. Just go ahead and speak another language and say, fuck y'all. Y'all better put them subtitles. And I stan.
Yeah, that was great. I loved it. Okay, I'm gonna go into my rant, unless you have some more.
Go ahead. I'm ready.
More stuff to say. Okay.
I'm gonna sip this water and listen. I got you.
Okay. So as I said, I read the script a few weeks before, and I was kind of bummed, and I'll talk about that and how that's kind of evolved since then. So in general, the reaction from what I've seen to the half of it, it's been really good, and a lot of people are kind of eating up, like, this queer content, because we eat up every bit of queer content that we can get, right? We don't have a lot. But there's so much more space for films like this. And my sadness when I read the script a while back was because I wish that it was just another rom-com with queer women to add to a plethora of films that we have. So even though I, at that moment, I guess I didn't really want a story that wasn't quite a love story, it was more of a friendship story, it would have been okay if I had so many others, right? But there's not a lot of others, and that's why I have to watch 15-year-old films over and over. And we don't have The Fucking Notebook, or and When Harry Met Sally, and 51st Dates, and that whole section on fucking Hulu just for straight white people. We don't fucking have that. All right.
Damn.
We've been waiting for the half of it to fill like a fucking hole in our hearts for like a year.
Half of a hole.
And that's not fair to that film, because we have so many fucking expectations on that one film to fulfill what we all want, and they can't do that. And, like, we just need so much fucking more. We needed Alice Wu to have had so much more support since 2015 and to have made another 5 films, because she easily could have. And we needed Aurora Guerrero to get recognition for being amazing years ago so that we could have 7 more Mosquita y Maris. But, but we don't fucking have that shit. So I was fucking sad when I first read this film. And now I'm happy with it. Now that I've seen it 2 times, read the script 2 times, I'm happy now. But I was fucking pissed. You know, at first, not pissed, I was just sad. I was sad, that's all. But I guess the point of this fucking rant is to go support your indie queer creators as much as you can and show all the love to this film and to the few others like it, and then maybe somebody will listen. And maybe we'll, when I'm old and gray, we'll have that lady rom-com section on Hulu, I don't know, but it doesn't exist right now. So I'm pissed anytime that we
don't. Let me hit that air horn for you. Let me hit that air horn. You just like, bitch, yes.
Oh,
yes. Like,
I can't. Dude. I just couldn't. I was sad, and it took me weeks to figure out why. But that's why.
I mean, yeah, because, like, this movie can't do everything. And I let that go. When we read the script, I was sad after it. But then I had to sit with it and go, you know what? This is just lesbian representation, period. It's not the rom-com I wanted, right? But it's like, wow, there's a gay girl and her best friend, like, being idiots together. And I was just like, oh, wow, like, I've never seen that. Has anyone ever seen that? Wow, this is a first, right? Like, Asian American, like, chick fucking with her, not fucking, ooh, no, just with hanging out with her homeboy, doing like weird dirtbag stuff, right? It's kind of dirtbaggy, but it's something we never gonna have. Yeah, it's not, you know, kosher. I wouldn't call it kosher what they did, right? Like, it's still not good. It's bad. Do not catfish people, y'all. But I mean, it was great. And Alice Wu, this being her second film, it pisses me off, dude. Just air horn.
It's infuriating that someone this good hasn't done at least 5 works when really mediocre white guys have done so much more.
Like, dude, the Game of Thrones was so bad, and Alice Wu was sitting there, right there, just waiting to make, like, fucking carefree shit for gay people and, like, for all people, right? Like, it just, I don't... Air horn, girl, like, just go off, spit hot fire, like, because this shit, ooh, the trash we're getting, you know, the garbage that we're eating up, like, the queer bait that we just, like, live on, like, I don't understand. And where Alice, who's right here, and she's like, here, just have it, like, just be. Yeah,
exactly, so. Exactly.
Oh, dude.
So I think that's probably all that we have in us for today.
Yeah.
Go watch the half of it on Netflix a few times and tell your friends about it.
Yes, make everyone watch it. It's lovely, 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 lovely. And obviously, my rating is 5 panluces, of course. Like, I don't...
Yeah, no capsitos. Yeah. Absolutely.
Go watch this shit, y'all. Y'all don't have an excuse. You have nothing to do. Like, please go watch this.
All right, thanks, guys. Make sure to check us out on Patreon for more episodes this month, because we are not going to have any. And if you are on Patreon, please disregard that message. Patreon.com/CYC podcast. And buy our shirts on Teespring. The link is in our description, in our bio, on our website, Cabras y Chingonas, pretty much everywhere that you can find it. And follow us, Instagram and Twitter, @CYC podcast. I think that's everything.
Yeah. Oh, don't forget to rate and review. 5 stars. 5 stars only. your broke bitches from Texas. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right, guys. Bye.